නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස So actually we were discussing Sabiya Sutta and there during the discussion we got a request related to absorptions related to jhana And on that day, I promised that we are going to discuss it little detail using a research paper published by Venerable Analeo. So Bhikkhu Analeo is one prominent monk. He long time back, he was in Sri Lanka. He did his PhD at Peradeniya University. And he was at Nissaravane for some time. And he is a good follower of Most Venerable Katukurunde Nyanananda Mahathero. And he is the one actually persuaded Katukulunde Nyanananda Mahathero to conduct all the Nibbana series of sermons in English as well. Because they were first conducted at Nissaravane using the Sinhala language. And then later, Venerable Analeo actually persuaded Most Venerable Katukulunde Nyanananda Mahathero to conduct the same thing in English as well. So I think he was instrumental in transcribing the talks. And further, he recently conducted the same 33 sermons in English by Most Venerable Katukulunde Nyanananda Mahathero. And he, this Analeo, Bante Analeo, Bhikkhu Analeo, actually has delivered a free series of Dhamma discussions based on this 33 sermons. So likewise, he is very much in the same kind of, school where the Theravada tradition and interestingly he is investigating the other traditions as well. So there are a few books he has published researching on the other traditions like Mahayana tradition and the Tibetan tradition and trying to get some light from those traditions in the sense the literature in those traditions. So we have the Theravada canon, the Theravada Tripitaka. And parallelly, there was a Tibetan Tripitaka or Tibetan literature as well as the Mahayana literature, what we call as the Agamas. And so Venerable Analeo's speciality is that he is capable of going through all these different sources and getting some comparative understanding. And he is presenting them in a very understandable manner. And he is further conducting retreats at Barre Center in the Massachusetts and so these are the few things related to Venerable Analeo. So I sometimes actually follow him and read his articles, his research papers, which are quite knowledgeable and has a lot of insights, and we can get a thorough understanding about the Dhamma by going through his articles. So this is one of them, where a brief history of Buddhist absorption. So he do a fair comparative analysis taking the Theravada canon as the primary source and then using other sources like Tibetan canon as well as the Mahayana Tripitaka as the sources. So here he is trying to give a thorough analysis on the absorption. So absorption typically translated as jhana, or jhana is translated as absorption. So different types of absorption we can come across. So to the level of their depth, we can come across one type of absorption. And then depending on their jhana factors, so the concentration factors, we can define what is the type of absorption that one is in. And another point is the absorption the right concentration? Because you know that the Noble Eightfold Path talks about the right concentration or Samma Sama. So it is debatable whether the Samma Samadhi is the right is the absorption or not. So those points are fairly discussed in this article, in this research paper. So we are going to do a little analysis or going through of the same research paper. So Venerable Analeo points out that the absorptions were available before the Buddha. So that basically during the Buddha's time, some were already in the absorption meditation and that is being highlighted in certain suttas. And some are trying to attain those absorptions and some are not. And probably you can remember that when the Prince Siddhartha was born, it is heard that the teacher of the Suddhodana, that is the Asita, was in the heaven because he was having the psychic powers, and he saw the dancing angels, and when inquired, he get to know that there's a very say auspicious birth has happened in the earth. So that is the Prince Siddhartha. So this kind of literature is available, so that indicates that the absorptions were available before the Buddha. And basically, as in the Sakaludaya Sutta, where Buddha mentioned that they were thinking only the third jhana is the last, and then Buddha later mentioned it is not the last one, but there are some more. So that means the Sakaludaya and his group is not Buddhist actually, in a way not following the Buddha's teaching, but having a discussion with the Buddha, but they were talking about the jhana. So that means it is not unique to the Buddha's teaching, what we are talking right now, but it was something available. And then and sometimes the jhanas are mistakenly understood as the nibbana. So that is something wrong, where when a person go to some deep absorption, he can imagine or he can misunderstand the jhana as the nibbana. So that is one common mistake can happen, because the jhanic experience is so blissful and it is quite deep, and you cut off from the whole world, and as a result of that, one might get misled thinking that it is the nibbana. So that is something common has happened, and that is also discussed in wrongly misunderstanding that jhana as the nibbana. So that is discussed in Digha Nikaya, that is the first sutta of Digha Nikaya, that is highlighted here. And then another point is and certain other suttas also indicate the same thing. Sometimes thinking that Nibbana as this bodily welfare or well-being, so that is also there. So certain misunderstandings about the Nibbana. That basically, so the conclusion that Venerable Anālaya from this particular chapter he is coming to is that the early discourses consider absorption attainment to have already been known before the advent of the Buddha. So that is something that we can understand. So before Buddha introduces his way of explanation, and probably he might have given a different explanation or definition to the jhana, but anyway, jhana is something known before the Buddha. And then there's another area he points out, so that is the recollection of the past lives. So there are many suttas talking about that. So there's a sequential order. So one may attain first jhana, then the second, then third, then fourth, and maybe to the arupa jhana, akasananchayatana, vinyananchayatana, akinchanyayatana, nevasanya, nasanyayatana, and then he starts recollecting his past lives. So this kind of an order is sometimes we can recognize from the suttas. So, but that indicates that this, the recollection of the past lives, requires a thorough or deep absorptions or so those psychic powers. So, but the thing is that recollection of past lives can go to wrong understandings. So that is being discussed in the Majjhima Nikaya first sutta, Mula Pariyaya Sutta, because sometimes yogis may have the capacity to recollect the past lives, thinking or based on that they can come up with various wrong views. So that is a different problem someone can have. So anyway, the mastery of the four absorption is necessary in order to attain this recollection of past lives. The first erroneous view surveyed in this discourse are held by recluses and Brahmins who had developed recollection of past lives. an ability to remember various aspects of one's own former lifetimes. The early discourses consider this ability to require mastery of the four absorptions. So basically, mastery of four absorptions is a must if one has to have a thorough recollection of past lives. So it may depend on one's capacity. If one has very deep concentrations, abhinya, the psychic powers, then he may be able to recollect many past lives. And if he has less such power, then he may be able to recollect only few past lives. So likewise, so recollecting of the past lives, what we call as a pubbe nivasanusati, is fairly depending on the concentration power. And same thing is common to the divine eye, what we call as the dibba sota, dibba chakku, that also requires the absorptions, mastery of absorptions. And then he points out that about the Buddha's teachers. So this is actually before Buddha became fully enlightened. So he was wandering in search of Dhamma, in search of the truth. And he come across several teachers. One is Uddakaramaputta, the other one is Alarakalamaputta. So they both were with absorptions. Basically, Alarakalama was with the third immaterial jhana, that is the Arupa jhana, Akinchanyayatana, and Uddakaramaputta was in the fourth Arupa jhana, that is the Nevasanya Nasanyayatana. So basically that indicates that they were experiencing some deep concentrations. Alarakalama and Uddakaramaputta, whose teachings were related to the third and fourth of the four immaterial spheres, indicated in the Majjhimika 26. The relevant part depicts a gradual progression of attainments, where in each stage something needs to be transcended in order to reach the next stage. So this is the methodical attainment of the Arupa Jhana. So if one needs to attain the second Arupa Jhana, that is the Vijnananchayatana, the base of consciousness, limitless base of consciousness. So that in order to attain that, one has to let go of the akasananchayat. Now if one wants to attain the akinchanyayatana, one has to let go of the vinyananchayatana. If one has to attain the nivasanyanasanyayatana, one has to let go of akinchanyayatana. So likewise, a progressive order is there when one is attaining the jhana. So it is not that one can attain everything together, rather one after the other. That is the typical gradual order one can attain Arupa Jhana. And another interesting point is in the Rupa Jhana, in the typical material absorptions, one's mind is somewhat constricted or restrained to a particular object. But on the other hand, in the Arupa Jhana, mind becomes fairly expanded, or in the other sense, it is boundless. So that is one key characteristics in the Arupa Jhana. And now, so this is a common statement where how one attained the Arupa Jhana after practicing the Rupa Jhana. So he is letting go of the all different kinds of signs in order to attain this what you call as the Akasananchayatana. So the Udaya Bhikkhu Sabbaso Rupa Sanyanam Samatikkama Patika Sanyanam Atthangama. So this is the common term typically given. So the typical matter related signs, rupa signs, rupa sanya, are all abandoned, penetrated, and whatever any kind of friction in the mind, that also abandoned. So the mind become completely boundless, expanded, open. So that is how one attains the arupa jhana. And then actually now he talks about the Buddha's experience. So that is before he became the Buddha, he has some nice experience about jhana as a child. Probably you can remember in Majjhima Nikaya 36 it is explained, Abhijanami ko panahang pitu sakkas kammante Sitaya jambu ඡායාය නිසින්නෝ විවිච්ඡේව කාමේහි විවිච්ඡාකුසලේහි ධම්මේහි සරිතක්කං සවිචාරං විවේකජං පීතිසුඛං පඨමං ජහනං උපසම්පජ්ජ විහෙරිතා. So now later Buddha explained that he was able to attain first jhana as a child when the King Suddhodana was conducting the plowing ceremony. So during that time the Prince Siddhartha had a seclusion, and during that time he has gone under a tree, and there he was able to attain the first jhana. So that is an interesting experience that he was revealing after he became the Buddha. So interesting point is, now all these things are not unique to the Theravada canon. So Venerable Analeo has found the corresponding references available in the other canons as well. So that is also included in this research paper. So he was able to get some evidence from the other literature. Now here, another interesting point highlighted in another sutta, where Buddha was having a discussion with, this is actually in the, I can remember this one, MN 128, Majjhima Nikaya 128, is the Upakkilesa Sutta. So where Buddha is having a discussion with Venerable Aniruddha. So at that time Aniruddha was struggling with attaining jhana, attaining absorptions. So he's telling that he can't properly manage, properly balance, and he is now trying to attain the Dibba Chakku, that means the divine eye, but he was unable to do that because he couldn't properly balance. So Buddha himself is telling that I also had the same kind of trouble when I was trying to attain that jhana. So it's interesting, it is not that Buddha was a kind of superhuman, that he went through everything at one shot. It is not like that. He also has gone through a lot of hardships, and through going through those hardships he was able to attain everything in perfection. So it is not a kind of a path went through a rose bed, but he went through a lot of ups and downs, difficulties, and through a lot of endurance he was able to attain the perfection, full enlightenment. So he humbly explained that. So that's the beauty. So here actually Buddha mentioned to Venerable Aniruddha that while he was trying, that he understood that the vichikicca and many others are actually mentioned in that Upakkilesa Sutta. Actually we discussed Upakkilesa Sutta sometime back, you can refer that sutta. So how Buddha is explaining these different defilements available in the mind can become a hindrance, can become an obstruction to attaining jhana. So those obstructions are to be recognized and then abandoned, then only one is able to attain the jhana. So that is explained in this Upakkilesa Sutta. Vichikicca cittasu upakkileso ti iti viditva, vichikicca cittasu upakkileso pahino ahosi. Now he understood. Now this is just an example. There are many defilements explained in that sutta. So Buddha mentioned that I understood doubt as one of the defilement, then I was able to abandon that, kept it aside, and then I tried continuing the path. So likewise, many other defilements are mentioned in this sutta, and once they are abandoned, then only he was able to properly attain the jhana. That means one point that we can understand, in order to attain jhana, it is not just the willpower, rather it necessary, but other defilements also have to be abandoned, then only the proper balance would happen. Now he is explaining the same thing to Venerable Aniruddha, and Aniruddha also has followed the instructions from the Buddha, and later he became the supreme of the divine eye, foremost all among all monastics, disciples in the divine eye, in the Dibba Chakku. So even though he had initial struggle, but he then mastered it and he became the foremost in everyone who is having the capacity to have this divine eye. And then Venerable Aniruddha discuss about the potential drawbacks of absorption, because as I mentioned, absorptions are quite interesting and blissful. So there can be a natural attachment to them. There can be potential drawbacks. One problem can be the attachment to deep concentration experiences. Because when one is in deep concentration, you are fully cut off from the whole world. So the world, typically we know that the world is fully chaotic and with a lot of turbulence. So if one has a capacity to cut off from all turbulence and just in a very serene, tranquil state for a long time, so that will be definitely a very good escape. So as a result of that, one starts preferring concentration. One starts sitting, expecting concentration. So that is there. So therefore, that is one hindrance. Because the problem is, you may be involved in too long in the absorptions, forgetting about the vipassana. So Buddha's teaching is not merely highlighting the concentration. Concentration is not the ultimatum. So Buddha's teaching highlights about the realizations, understandings, thorough knowledge about how things truly are. So that is the direction that Buddha pointed out. So as we just discussed, jhanas are already available, but Buddha's unique finding is not jhana, but the vipassana techniques, so that one can fully penetrate all the defilements, completely purify one's mind. So that is his finding in a way. But involving too much excessively in the jhana can neglect one's that practice, vipassana practice. So that is one drawback. And then, so it is mentioned in Anguttara Nikaya, Seithapi bhikkhave puriso lepa gatena hattena sakhaṁ ganheya tassaso hatto sajjayyapi ganheyapi bajjheyapi. So Buddha is giving a simile here. So if there is a sticky branch available, if one is touching that sticky branch, so one's hand get stuck with it. So that's something like that. So the absorptions have such kind of a sticky nature, so one's mind get locked there. So you are very much like attached to that, and while being there you can't do much. You are very much like trapped there. So such problem is there in the absorptions. And then similar to the hand glued to the branch, a practitioner might end up being glued with attachment to the meditative experience of deeper levels of concentration. So that is something explained here. Then one's mind is reckoned to be stuck within. So this is the Uddesa Vibhanga Sutta. So there Buddha explains, I think we discussed Uddesa Vibhanga Sutta also already. So how when one is going through a particular jhana, so those jhanic experiences become one's attachment to the consciousness. So one's consciousness is not fully liberated. Consciousness is not completely free. Rather, consciousness associates that blissful experience. So that blissful experience, that particular feeling, becomes the pasture of the consciousness, the house or the home of the consciousness. So one point, Venerable Analeo here, as an example, pointed out, Chatuttajjhanam upasampajya viharati tassa adukkama sukhanusari vinyanam hoti adukkama sukha assada gatitam adukkama sukha assada vinibaddham adukkama sukha assada sanyojana sanyuttam ajjattam cittam santitam ti uchati. So that means the internally mind is stuck, not externally, but the mind is stuck internally. So this jhanic experience has very interesting, very pleasant abiding. So mind is stuck there. So that in the fourth jhana, one has that pleasant upekkha, the equanimity. So it becomes a blissful experience. So one is stuck there. One can't come out, or one can't do any kind of investigation because one is stuck there. So that sticky nature is there in the jhana. And on the other hand, another point is highlighted. So when one is dwelling in jhana without much paying attention to the vipassana part, without thoroughly understanding the impermanent suffering and unself, so those kind of vipassana knowledges, So one's mind is somewhat prone to other defilements. The problem is, while one is in jhana, one is somewhat safe. But when one is come out of that, if one go through any particular sensual desire like defilement, it can become profoundly influenced to the mind. Because the jhana indicates kind of again and again applying one's mind to the same object. So it can be true to the unwholesome object as well. In the jhana, actually one may take a wholesome object and get attached to that and get absorbed to that. But unfortunately, the same mind can attach to a unwholesome object. The practice that we have gone through, the jhanic practice that we have gone through, is now operating in a harmful manner. So mind now can't disassociate with this harmful, unwholesome object, but rather it also gets stuck to that unwholesome object. So that is being highlighted in the one sutta, Anguttara Nikaya, one sutta, Ekaccho Puggalo, Chatuttham Jhanam Upasampajya Viharati, So Labhi, Labhimhi Chatuttas Jhanas Ti, Sansat, So labhimmi chatuttassa jhanassati sansatto viharati rago cittam anuddhanseti. So raga anuddhansitena cittena sikkhang pachakkhaya hinaya vattati. That means even though he was able to attain the fourth jhana, he mixed up with the lay people. As a result of that, his mind became lustful and ultimately he disrobed. So it can happen. So that is one danger again highlighted. But anyway, this, as Venerable Analya points out, that doesn't mean that we have to completely dismiss jhana. So if we think that, okay, it is something dangerous, I should never attain jhana, so that is also a wrong attitude. If one has the capacity, if one has time, if you have enough time to invest on your meditation, trying that, have some experience is not really bad. But these warnings are there. These dangers are anyway available. And then we can get into the interesting discussion, absorption and right concentration. So absorption is a different subject. Now, as we know, it's a different area that one can master, one can get some benefits as well as certain disadvantages. So it's a different subject. Now the most important point is not really the jhana. What is the right concentration? So Buddha's teaching actually highlight the Noble Eightfold Path. In the Noble Eightfold Path, you know, right concentration, what we call as the Samma Samadhi, is one important thing. So now we need to check, is the Samma Samadhi, is the absorption or not? So what we prefer or what do you give more prominence is the Samma Samadhi, the proper concentration, the right concentration. Now Venerable Analya points out only later that absorptions have become this right concentration, but during the Buddha's time or in the early Buddhist teachings, absorptions are not taken as the right concentration. So that is a very interesting finding here. Now, in interesting suttas like right concentration, which at times is equated with the four absorptions, so that is seems to be a late addition. A close inspection brings to light that this equation occurs only rarely in the Pali discourses. Certain one or two suttas say like that, but they seems to be late additions. But the early Buddhist teachings does not particularly say right concentration equals four absorptions. It is not indicated there. And one point he highlights, even in the Mahasatipatthana Sutta, in the Digha Nikaya, you know that the section on Four Noble Truths are there. And there the right concentration is defined as the four absorptions. But Venerable Analya points out It is a late addition, and the other parallels, Chinese parallels, does not even have the Four Noble Truths included in the Digha Nikaya Mahasatipatthana Sutta. So that means that there is no talk about the four absorptions as the right concentration, because the whole Four Noble Truths part is not included in the Digha Nikaya Mahasatipatthana Sutta. And another point is, in the Satcha Vibhanga Sutta, there are also the right concentration is equated as the four absorptions. There are also, Venerable Analia points out, none of three Chinese parallels list the four levels of absorption when defining right concentration. So therefore, this seems to be a later addition, and he properly points it out. Actually, the parallels do not support an equation of right concentration with the attainment of the four absorptions. In contrast, the early discourses also present another type of definition of right concentration, in which case the parallels tend to agree. So this is a very interesting point. So one sutta is Majjhima Nikaya 117, so that is the Mahachattarisaka Sutta. We already discussed that. So there, right concentration is not defined as a single. Rather, it is something only happens when all the other path factors are well balanced. So balancing of all the proper path factors is indicated as the right concentration. So that is in the Mahachattarisaka Sutta, Majjhima Nikaya 117. Samma Ditti, Samma Sankappo, Samma Vacha, Samma Kammanto, Samma Ajivo, Samma Vayamo, Samma Sati. Imehi Sattangehi Chittasa Ekaggata Parikkhata Ayang Vacchati Ariyo Samma Samadhi Sa Upaniso Itipi Sa Parikkharo Itipi. That means one has to have proper understanding or proper view, right view. One has to have the right vitakka, the applied mind, and then one has to have proper words, proper actions, proper livelihood, and the proper or correct vayama, the effort, and correct sati, proper mindfulness. Then only the right concentration happens. So this is very interesting, and it is available in all the three, see the other traditions as well. The parallels also has the similar definitions given to the same thing. So here, for example, he points out Majjhima Agama, how it is explained: right view, right intention, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, and right mindfulness. If based on arousing these seven factors, on being supported by them, and on being endowed with them, the mind progresses well and attains unification, then this is reckoned noble right concentration, with its arousing, with its support, and with its endowments. That means all the path factors are to be required, then only the right concentration happens. Then original idea of right concentration would have been cultivation of unification of the mind in conjunction with the other path factors. And hence the stream minna, so the term stream minna, the sotapanna. The sotapanna is the person who attains this Noble Eightfold Path. He is now stepping into the Noble Eightfold Path. He is now starting developing the Noble Eightfold Path. He now come across, found the Noble Eightfold Path. Now he is the stream winner. So he achieves that by properly aligning, properly balancing all the path factors. Then only it is said, now he is in the right concentration. So here he points out, hence the stream that one enters on reaching the first level of awakening simply involves cultivating concentration by way of a collaboration with the other path factors, rather than requiring proficiency in absorption. So proficiency in absorption is a completely different thing, but now here we are talking about stream entry In order to attain stream memory, one has to have right concentration. Right concentration is the proper balancing availability of the other path factors. Now, such qualification would be more appropriate when concentration, whatever its depth, is fully aligned with the right view and supported by the other path factors. Such alignment would help to avoid mistaken views and attachments. So, you know, in the Vipassana, so one is expected to thoroughly understand the true nature of phenomena. So that true nature of phenomena helps one to detach from them rather than attach to them. So therefore, the proper investigation always leads to dispassion. Proper investigation always leads to some kind of disassociation rather than attaching to something. So therefore, when one attains the stream entry, so that means he has to go through that proper path, so there can't be any kind of attachment, rather his mind has to go through a kind of dispassionate process. So here he points out absorption and the qualities required for awakening. So sometimes it is listed as Bodhipakkhiya Dhamma, Chattaro Satipatthana, Chattaro Sammapadhana, Chattaro Iddipada, Pancha Indriyani, Pancha Balani, Satta Bunjangani, Ariyo Attangiko Maggo. So 37 Bodhipakkhiya Dhammas. But that list does not indicate 4 absorptions. And and even the Satipatthana does not indicate the absorptions. And he points out one interesting point. He found out that absorptions and Satipatthana together mentioned in one sutta called Dantabhumi Sutta, and he argues that the consultation of the Chinese parallel, however, makes it fairly probable that the presentation in this Pali discourse is the result of an error in textual transmission. For establishment of mindfulness would also not imply absorption. So Satipatthana practice actually gives us the capacity to detach observation. It is not that you get stuck with anything. Rather, one has to have that proper balance during the observation. That is a must. So if you start practicing Anapanasati, so you have to have that proper balance. You are allowing the body to breathe naturally and you are simply doing the observation. So that proper balance should be there. So the sampajana kari hoti. So one is fully aware of what's going on. That sampajanya, the comprehension, the wisdom part, has to be a must. It is not that you get stuck with the object. Rather, you always step back and watch. You always have that capacity. And here, Jhana Sangyutta. So this is the Sangyutta Nikaya. Now, Jhana Sangyutta, Venerable Analyo mentioned, it is not at all available in the other transmissions. That means other lineages. So Jhana Sangyutta seems to be a later addition. And there are actually the 4 absorptions are mentioned. But he argues that this whole Jhana Sangyutta was a later addition, happened after the Buddha's time. So why all these are there? So that is something that we need to understand. So after the Buddha's passing away, so people actually started getting to deep concentrations. Actually, Buddha's finding is not merely deep concentration. He talks about the right concentration and then continuing one's investigation as a result of that, liberating the mind, freeing the mind, keeping the mind dispassionate, not get stuck with anything, either in with gross object or any subtle object. You are not supposed to stuck with anything. So that is the finding, or that is the indication in the Buddha's teaching. But later what happens, so monks and whoever else, they start stuck in the absorptions, they are quite blissful, the deep concentration, and they want to put that also to the canon. So somehow it is also infiltrated to the canon. In all these cases, it seems as if with the passing of time, in some Buddhist traditions, an increasing importance had been accorded to absorption attainment as required for progress to awakening. The supposed need to master absorption inside meditation. Now we are getting to another area. So why we need absorption to insight. Now, then he actually start explaining what is jhana. So how are we going to explain jhana? What is the jhana? So the jhana is very much explained based on the jhana factors. So jhana factors are actually available in the insight practice. So that is the argument made by Mahasi Sayadaw. So there he mentioned, having on to this statement of ours, some say that vipassana can be developed only after achieving purification of mind through attaining jhanic concentration. Without jhanic concentration, purification of the mind cannot be brought about. Consequently, vipassana cannot be developed. So there's an argument that a jhanic experience is a must. So, insight knowledges as forms of absorption. Now, then the Mahasi Sayadaw, actually he identifies during the vipassana practice, jhana happens. It is not that one is abandoning jhana, but the jhana factors are present in the vipassana practice. Insight meditation and jhana have some characteristics in common. Whenever the yogi observes any phenomena, his insight meditation is somewhat like the first jhana and its five characteristics. So likewise, he continues explaining the vipassana jhana. So that's another area that we can discuss. So what are the vipassana jhana? I think we can stop here and take it to another day, because this is another interesting area rather than rushing through. So if you have any question, we can discuss and we can spend some time, because this is another area we need to spend some time. Vipassana jhanas and how we can get some light from that. I think rather than rushing through, I think we can stop here. So already we have discussed certain points. So if you have any question, so please participate to the discussion.
I'd like to invite Gishan for the first question.
Thank you very much, Bante. I really enjoy this as well. I appreciate the publication that you shared. I want to make a statement first and then I'll go for the question, because I made an error last time, and I want to clear in front of the forum about the error that I made. This is from the last week.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought I will address that. So during the last week talk, I think Kumudini, if I'm correctly pronouncing her name right, Dayaka Kumudini brought up a point. This is a view of Ajahn Brahmali. And the statement was the same thing what we just discussed as well. One cannot attain so on without getting in or obtaining jhana or the absorptions. So my error was, which I wanted to state and then ask for the pardon, and this is during my response I made that error, and making that error was mixing the two names. I, instead of Ajahn Brahmali, I think I said
Bhikkhu
Analeo. Bhikkhu Analeo, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Bhikkhu Analeo.
Yeah.
So please accept my apologies. I just wanted to get the record straight, and that's that. And now I wanted to ask this question through the conversation that or the, through the sermon today, and you talked about dispassionate, you know, the when certain ideas comes, or we through seeing them as dispassionate or trying to detach with certain aspects of things. And would you be kind to explain a bit more further? Because is this what put the one time I remember in some of the discourses talk about to question and to sort of see if Dhamma talks from other not to basically believe in anybody's say, but to sort of believe within you, and to sort of see even if Buddha says not to believe even, but to practice it and sort of believe within you, and so you will sort of see this experience and you will feel it and etc. So is that am I in that kind of thinking right, or if you don't mind, please explain to me a bit more with that dispassionate content that you just stated. Thank you.
Yeah, so actually the dispassion what we were highlighting is something natural which has to arise during the practice. Now when one is involved with Satipatthana practice, one first actually establish oneself in the mindfulness, that is the Satipatthana part, and then one start the investigation, that is the Satipatthana Bhavana part. So that is where one become continuing in one's investigation, developing thorough understanding about different phenomena. It may be the body, it may be the feelings, it may be the mind, and when one do that part, so the result is the dispassion. Result is the disenchantment, nibbida and viraga. So that is a statement that Buddha makes in many suttas. Like say for example in the Chetanakarani Sutta. So there the Buddha mentioned about kind of progressive status. How this let me explain. So one after the other. So let me take it and show you. That would be much easier. So the Chetanakaraniya Sutta. So Buddha actually explain it as a whole progressive stages. How one may go through different attainments one after the other. So let me share the screen. So this is the Silavato bhikkave sila sampannassa na chetanaya karaniya avipattisaro me uppajjatuti dhammata yasa bhikkave yang silavato sila sampannassa avipattisaro uppajjati. So Buddha mentioned it is not one has to make any intentional attempt to make avipattisaro, make the mind free from any kind of accusations. Rather, when one is properly developing the sila, morality, so it is a dhammata, it is a law that the avipattisara happens. And then for example, another part, say, sukhino bhikkave na chetanaya karaniya chittamme samadhiyatiti. So here I am referring. Dhammata yasa bhikkave yang sukhino chittam samadhiyati. So you don't need to expect a kind of a samadhi willfully. Rather, Buddha mentioned, when the mind is properly feeling happy, feeling calm, feeling tranquil, the next result is the samadhi. Sukhino bhikkhave. Now, when you are in a more comfortable, more happy kind of a state of mind, you don't need to willfully attempt to make an attempt to attain samadhi. Rather, Buddha mentioned, so it is a dhammata, it's a law. So similarly, yathabhutam bhikkave janato passato na chetanaya karaniyam nibbindamiti Dhammataya bhikkave yang yathabhutan jānam pasan nibbindati. So that means if one knows things properly, if he is capable to see things as they truly are, this is kind of an automatic result that you become disenchanted. Nibbin nasa bhikkave na chetanaya karaniyam virajyamiti. Dhammataya sa bhikkave yang nibbin no virajyati. So if the disenchantment is there, you don't need to make any willful attempt to become dispassionate, but the being dispassionate is a dhammata, is a law, it's a nature. So that's what I want to highlight. So during the vipassana practice, so one is doing the investigation, so that as a result of investigation, one has to have the disenchantment, one has to have the dispassion. So that is actually the path, the direction that Buddha is pointing out. So the mind becomes disassociating things. Mind starts not attaching to things. Mind starts letting go of things. Mind starts not grasping things because it understood the true nature. So the disenchantment and dispassion becomes more and more evident. On such case, having the right concentration means it has to be dispassionate. It is not something kind of one's mind got stuck. Rather, mind has to maintain that disassociation, the non-grasping nature within the mind. So that's what I want to highlight.
Very well, thank you so much. This is very clear, and I got a screenshot as well. I will go and refer this even to detail. So
yeah.
Thank you so much. I do appreciate it.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Kumudini for the next question.
Sarnai Bante, thank you so much for presenting this talk and details about the jhanas and so on. I wanted to first of all thank you for that, and also to let you know that I listened to all the talks of your Chanki Sutra given in Australia. And everything I asked about was clarified in that series of talks.
Mm-hmm.
I think after listening to your today's talk, I realized that the jhanas that are being talked about is the khanika samadhis, right?
Yeah, actually in
the
vipassana
side.
Exactly. Yes, in the vipassana side, the jhana which is mostly discussed are the khanika samadhi, because again and again you are very much paying your attention to a new phenomena, what is arising right now. So therefore, the Khanika Samadhi is the kind of highlighted part.
That's right. It is very, very clear to me. I really am so appreciative of it. Bhante, I would like to read that article. I learn better when I read. Could you please give me the title so that I can read and be prepared for the next one?
You mean the article that I am using?
Yes.
Yeah. I already shared that. Don't know whether you didn't get it. Let me share it.
Yeah. I'll take a photocopy.
Okay. I am trying to upload it. So.
Okay. Thank you, Pante.
Got it or not?
Not yet.
Okay.
Yet.
Now
just
I send. See whether you got it. I shared to everyone. Jennifer, did you get it?
I haven't yet. No, I didn't get it yet. It went
yes,
away from my
it.
Screen. It went away from my screen, Bante.
No, you got to.
I can follow up and send you an email after class.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Please, Jennifer, I would really appreciate that. Thank
sure.
you.
No problem.
Okay.
I cannot believe how grateful I am. Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, thank you. I'd like to invite Chitta Devi for the next question. It's Ratika. Apologies.
Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, can you hear me?
Yes.
First of all, I want to thank you for that talk too. just like Kumudini, I really benefited by it, and I too would like to have a copy of it. So if Jennifer is sending it, please send me also a copy. Maybe others also who might like it. I really want to thank you because I was having this problem, and you know this, that sometimes when you were teaching, I was writing because I wanted to see what you are saying, and you know that I was going to some kind of absorption, and it was scaring me because there were times when I was meditating where I felt that I was falling asleep, and I was not, that I was losing my awareness. So I was, I felt that that was a wrong thing that I, I don't know what it was, whether my feelings were right, but I felt that the way I was going, I shouldn't lose my mindfulness, because like you said, the samadhi, or like Bhikkhu Vainalio said, the samadhi of right concentration required right effort and right mindfulness, and that meant that I had to have my awareness all the time when I was sitting in meditation. But in my case, how I felt, and I don't know if it was right or wrong, was that I was not in awareness from time to time. I was asleep from time to time because I didn't have a full awareness of what was happening. So you were kindly asked me to increase my walking meditation, which really, really made a huge difference. First of all, I want to thank you and let you know that this problem I had with some kind of concentration, I'm not sure what, but I should not be losing my mindfulness or my awareness, because then I'm not in the Sattara Satipatthana Sutta. And it was a great benefit to me. Now my question is this. Now I'm doing the Iriyapata Parva, right? And walking part is really, really going well from my judgment, in the sense that I'm walking 1 to 2 hours a day as much as I can, and I'm doing other activities that are also requiring the use of the limbs and movement, in addition to the daily doing things like cooking or walking or folding the clothes or whatever. I have included swimming as much as possible, not all the time, but maybe twice a week or sometimes 3 times a week. So that part is going well. What I need to know is how I incorporate sitting meditation, and if I should incorporate sitting meditation. I'll tell you what I'm doing, but I'm not sure if I'm doing this part right, because you told me that I should increase the sitting meditation now, and in addition to having the 1 to 2 hours of walking, I should increase the sitting meditation. So what I'm doing right now is, if I feel any dis-ease or discomfort, or if I feel stress, I am, and I'm saying when I'm still, right, if I'm seated or if I'm lying down, or when I'm not walking, or any other situation, I'm investigating that and trying to see what the cause was, putting it against the Four Noble Truths, seeing whether there's attachment there, whether there is craving there. So basically, I'm kind of getting to know my mind or observing my mind. But sometimes it's maybe the thought, sometimes it may be somebody, something somebody said, sometimes it's sanya, in other words, it's something somebody said in the past, not at the moment, not when I'm talking. But other than that, doing that, observing my mind when I'm still or in daily life, I'm not sure what I'm exactly supposed to do, because I don't think I'm supposed to go into checking my breathing and going into anapanasati, or am I wrong? So what exactly should I be doing if I'm lying down or relaxing or sitting?
Yeah, in the walking, if you are doing recognizing of various element characteristics, You can continue the same thing while lying down and while sitting.
It is there sometimes and it is not there sometimes, and I have learned to be, how shall I say, equanimous about it and not to have attachment to having the dhatu guna or the elements all the time.
Mm-hmm. So if they are available, you can watch and assume that,
yes,
it is, assume that it is not available. Can you softly,
yes,
look at your mind?
If it is not available, can I look at my mind?
Yes, yes.
If I can mind only if the mind is having stress or something on it.
No. Not only when it is stressed.
I'm not having,
just look at the mind. Just look at the mind. So when, it is not only during the mind when it is stressed out, but when the mind is simply thinking about something, you can step back and watch. So those thoughts, if you can recognize, so they are merely thoughts. They have the nature of coming and going. So if you can recognize this, this will be a very interesting insight.
Okay. I don't think I can do, I haven't been able to do that as easily as the other one, right?
No, don't do it immediately. So little,
right.
do proper walking practice. So that is where you are,
yes,
keeping your attention on the bodily phenomena, and you do
right.
fair amount of investigation. So as a result of that, now you have sharpened the mindfulness, sharpened the clear comprehension, and now you may have the capacity to look at the mind. You can try that, actually. No harm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Should I stop the walking and sit down and do that?
Yes. No problem.
Okay, so what I should do is like do 1 hour and then sit and watch it. Or because usually I do 1 hour at a time, I don't do more than that. So what I should be doing is doing the 1 hour and then sitting immediately and then observing my mind.
Yeah.
Usually after the 1 hour, it might go to doing housework or
mm-hmm.
something else. I might sit down in the afternoon or something. Do the 1 hour and
yeah.
then do the sitting.
Yes, that will be a proper continuation. Then actually you can refine your mindfulness, because you already have gained mindfulness through walking practice. So while sitting,
yes.
you are sharpening it further by applying it to the Chittanupassana, and you are again going through a different domain. So that is observing different mental factors different thoughts. So if you can distinctly recognize different thoughts and let them go without getting driven by them, so that means you have that capacity.
Okay, thank you very much. Sometimes
oh, yeah.
in my daily life, I can see that.
Mm-hmm.
I can, but I have always noticed it when there was desire or if there was some kind of aversion
mm-hmm.
in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Rather when the mind was... Or I can notice it also when I'm happy and when I'm involved in a dana or something, something that is inspiring to me,
mm-hmm.
or even writing. Yeah, I can notice it, but some of the times I don't notice what it is. So
yeah.
I will be more careful and see
yeah.
Whether I can notice in other situations too, rather than in the ones where I can identify if there is desire, if I like something, or if there is aversion, I don't like something, or if I can notice that I'm happy and I'm enjoying a spiritual, how should I say, compassionate or a dana or some event like that.
Mm-hmm.
I will try and do. So
yeah.
thank you very
yeah.
much.
Okay.
Teruan Sanai.
Yeah, Teruan Sanai.
Okay, thank you. Next, I'd like to invite Chitta Devi.
Thank you very much, Jennifer. Bhante, I just want to make a comment and then incorporate my question also there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you spoke about jhanas today, and also you mentioned Sarada Pandita. He mentions the four jhanas in Vipassana. What my question also is that to get the samadhi through anapana, and then jhana also involves a lot of effort. As mentioned in the Eightfold Path, Bhante, you can't just get those things. They don't just come, you know, Bhante.
Mm-hmm.
And similarly, the four jhanas that Sayadaw Panku Pandita is mentioning is, from my point of view, it may be that I haven't understood properly, very similar to the four jhanas that you get in the concentration meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So it is at the end of it, it's the same end result. I mean, I know you said you're going to talk about it next time, but still, whether you do vipassana or anapana and concentration that way, you still can have some attachment to those jhanas, whether you get it through concentration or vipassana, Bhante.
I don't think that's a significant...
Is that right?
Yeah, the thing is, there's a significant difference, because the thing is, in the typical samatha jhana, the point is that we are very much attached to that, we are stuck in it, and we are absorbed to that. But on the other hand, in the vipassana part, actually, how it operates is that again and again the mind is there, and as we just discussed, it is the again and again a new phenomena is there. So we are applying our mind again and again to this new phenomena, and we do the investigation, and it happens almost like effortless manner. Now, as a result of that, you generate some kind of a joy, and the mind is relaxed, body is relaxed, and the mind is concentrated. So the jhana factors are there, but the interesting part is the wisdom is generating as a result of this kind of an investigation. So if, as we just discussed, so if investigation is lead to understanding, that understanding leads to dispassion. So there's a significant difference. It is not that you simply do nothing and stay quiet or just absorb to something. Rather, your mind is quite active. Quite active, and you do
thorough
investigation. Bhante. Yes, yes.
But this investigation only leads you to the vipassana jhanas, Bhante. When you're investigating and doing this, you're getting more and more relaxed, and the body is relaxed, and then you go into those jhanas. So, and also in the samatha jhani fact, once you finish that, you can go into vipassana anyway, no, Bhante? I mean, that's just a possibility, no?
No,
once that's what the Buddha says anyway.
No, this is already vipassana.
No, what I'm saying is, when you get the samatha jhanas, Bhante, you come out of it, no, you can't sit there and wait forever, no, you
come
out of it.
Correct.
Then you spend a little time doing what you're doing for the week, because now you're at a fairly high clear clarity in the mind, then you go on to vipassana, and that is very clear in your mind. Isn't that right, Bhante?
Yeah, that's the thing. It may be right, but only thing is, so if we have gone to two deep concentrations, probably your body has completely disappeared. So at that time, it's quite difficult for you to recognize certain phenomena, any kind of sensation within the body, because you have been in a very deep concentration, and as a result of that, the complete kind of cutting off has happened.
Yes, Bhante, please continue.
Yeah, so that's why, so rather than going to very, very deep concentrations and get stuck there, so you better develop certain amount of concentration which is fair enough for you to do a thorough investigation. So you are capable of putting your mind to a new phenomena, and then you do the investigation, and that investigation was successful. As a result of that, a little joy is there. There are no hindrances, and the mind is concentrated. So the jhanic factors are present, and you have the capacity to do the investigation as well. The full awareness, the mindfulness, that all those capacities are well available. It is not that you are completely cut off from everything. Rather, you are fully aware of what is going on right now, and you are not distracted. Mind is well tamed onto the desired object, and you are doing the investigation.
Yes, Bhante, that's right. Now, I'm asking is that even after the first or second jhana, the mind is very clear, and you're not so deeply absorbed that you are concentrated, but then when you come out, suddenly you come out of Ignorante, you have no control over that, then in that clear state, then you can go into Vipassana.
Can. Right? Yeah. It's possible, and depending on whether you haven't gone too far.
Yeah, I take that point.
Yeah.
But also in the seven factors of enlightenment, whether you are doing Samatha or Vipassana, or, I mean, I don't think the Buddha really sort of wanted us to go cut and dry on those facts, breaking one into another.
Yes,
I think you need to do both.
Correct.
I'm sure you have said that, and Yoko Amro has said that.
Correct.
Buddha talks about the seven factors of enlightenment, where he talks about Preeti and
Pasaddi.
And Pasaddi, which is tranquility, which is also a very, it is a very beautiful sort of state of mind and body.
Correct. Definitely.
Right?
Definitely. So that's why when you are mindful, you start investigation. That is the Dhamma Vichaya. And when Dhamma Vichaya happens, you are balancing the effort. So the effort, enlightenment factor, and the Piti Sambojjhanga, then the Pasaddi, tranquility Sambojjhanga.
Yeah.
So likewise, it's a very methodical order, and it's a Vipassana practice. It's not that you are simply, dumb and just stuck at somewhere. Rather, you are continuing your thorough investigation. As a result of that, the Piti is there. As a result of that, again, the mind and the body become relaxed, comfort, happy, and all these things are present.
Exactly. So one can lead to the other. That's what I'm saying. But I mean, I hear your point. If you go too far, then it's difficult to get out of it in a to do the investigation.
Mm-hmm.
But also, whatever I don't know. Correct me if I'm saying this wrong. In the Samatha Bhavana, also you develop your seven factors of enlightenment.
That's the thing.
Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's the thing. So that's what we need to recognize. Now, the certain Samatha Jhanas, so they are somewhat biased towards the Samadhi, somewhat biased towards the concentration, and fairly blocks the mindfulness and the, what you call, the investigation. So that is the problem. So you completely being cut off, and you are not aware of what's really going on, and that indicates you can't do anything almost like. So that is something not advantageous. You can do it as a kind of an escapism, but that is not the path. That is also another thing. So immediately you can't stop. Immediately you can't start, because you may have a certain influence coming from the jhana. It is true that your mind is somewhat clear, true,
very clear.
But the thing is, you have nothing to you. The raw material for you to investigate, it is not present. At the moment, these are not available, because you are in a deep concentration.
Okay, so you're saying that I missed the bus then.
Exactly.
That's what you're saying.
Exactly.
So anyway, I mean, I do a lot of Vipassana now. I mean, I used to have a lot of Samatha. I used to do a lot of Samatha because I used to be in the the temple used we had we did the Samatha Bhavana, but I think for me that I feel that I have a very rich experience by doing the Samatha Bhavana and then switching on to Vipassana, because I think I have experienced both. So I think that has helped me to develop the seven factors of enlightenment also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
the thing is,
developing it, and we are walking on this path, so we are all walking on it and hoping to attain something. But I think that enriches your meditative life. That's what I'm trying to say.
So actually,
I'm sure you'll agree with me.
Yeah. So that's what I like to share. I mean, we can do Samatha practice separately, and we can, as you said, it will give you another perspective about the meditation. So it's a different practice. Now, when we are stepping into Vipassana, better without going to Jhana, without going to absorptions, better we start at the level of excess concentration. So without going to deep concentrations, we can stop in between where yeah. the body is available, where the body phenomena are present and you are fully aware of them. But again, still you have certain amount of concentration where you can distinctly recognize those phenomena, and it's not that the mind is not cluttered and mind's clarity is available, and you have the capacity to distinctly recognize those phenomena and you are not into the deep concentration. So before attaining deep concentration, you can start the Vipassana practice. And as you said, if you have separately worked out samatha practice and you have some jhanic experience and you know the taste of it, so that's actually also counts, because during the Vipassana practice also sometimes you might get misunderstand something is as the Maggapala, but you can differentiate that with the jhana practice and see certain similarities, and you have a further kind of an understanding, this is not Maggapala, I have to continue the path, so something like that would be helpful. Because if you simply have the Vipassana practice without any kind of samatha experience, so that also can be a little problematic, because whenever through the Vipassana practice, when the mind is somewhat concentrated, so you might get misunderstood that this is a kind of an attainment. Rather, the continuation of the practice is important rather than immediately assuming ourselves to achieve this and that. So anyway, as you pointed out, separately having some jhana experience, of course, will be an advantage. But during the Vipassana practice, better, I feel, before attaining the jhana, we better switch to Vipassana after we attain the excess concentration. What we call as the...
Yes, I do that now, Bhante. But I don't know. I think that it's a great experience to experience these states, because anyway the Buddha also attained those, and he has given many talks on the jhanas. Though I agree that he has said we have to move on from there to the Vipassana, and he has encouraged people to Vipassana. But however, we mustn't forget that the Buddha also spoke many talks on the Samtajanas.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that right, Bhante?
Yeah, yeah. So that's a separate subject. So that's what I like to keep it as a separate subject. So if you want to attain, say, Pubbe Nivasanusati, if you want to attain Dibba Chakku, and all those of psychic powers, yes, jhana is a must. But if you want to go for the... So that's a separate subject, by the way.
Difficult enough to attain. Yeah. But what I'm trying to say is that a lot of people have these people do Vipassana feel that, you know, the jhanas, some of the jhanas are, you know, a bit a negative aspect they put in, but I don't know. I think it's a great experience, one thing. Don't you think so? I mean, when you have both to look into, and the way I read the book In This Very Life by Sayadaw Pandita, for me, I don't know, maybe that I don't have a much understanding, but the way he's talking about the jhanas is very similar to the samatha.
So that's the fair similarities are there. Fair similarities are there, and again, as you said, so we have to make use of both. It is not that we are completely against samatha, but we need samatha. We need certain amount of samatha, but to what extent we need is something that we need to recognize.
Yes, I take that point completely, Bhante, because I have gone into those concentrations and I have been there, and you know, and I have experienced it. But I take the point that the Vipassana is what we need, but both have their advantages and both are very enriching. And anyway, the Buddha never sort of in his time didn't have a sharp line between these two, and he incorporated both and he encouraged both. And of course, he said to develop wisdom, you have to have the the Vipassana, and that we all know.
Is
that right, Bhakti?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, it's a great experience, Bhakti.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think that everybody should, at some stage in their lives, the basic jhanas. I mean, we're not talking about arupa jhanas, but, just the basic. And I don't think anybody wants to have psychic powers and all. That is not something on the cards, no, Bhakti?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The thing is, during the vipassana also, when you are going through a deep vipassana, you get much and better, even deep concentration levels. So it is not that you are completely missing the thing. So even if you suppose that you haven't been to deep concentrations, but you switch yourself to the vipassana path during the excess concentration, and now you are continuing your vipassana path. So during the vipassana path also, you come into a very deep concentrations during the vipassana. But the knowledge is available, the fair understanding is available, but deep concentration is also available. Within your purview, it is not that you completely lost in it, but you are in a very full awareness of it. So likewise, it is not that you are completely missing everything by switching yourself to vipassana at the level of excess concentration. But as you said, if you have some pre-taste of samatha jhana, so that then you can do a kind of a comparative analysis. So what is the difference? So you can teach, or you can compare, and you can have your own experience onto both sides. So you know exactly, okay, this is what happened in the samatha part, this is what exactly happened in the vipassana part, so that your understanding is more clear. So that advantage is there.
Yes, and the Buddha encouraged us to do both, so that's what we have to understand as well. Isn't that right, Bhante?
Yeah, we can say so, yes.
Because he gave many talks on samatha jhanas. I think more than vipassana jhana, vipassana. I don't know whether I have got that right. You might be able to give.
No, I don't think. That's what we need to understand. So later traditions, actually after Buddha's passing away, so the great emphasis is given to deep concentrations. So that's what Venerable Anarley also pointing out. So the Buddha actually found the middle range of samatha. So rather than highly encouraging being the absorptions, he understood the value of it. And he know the moderation of it. But later what happened was, the people lost their moderation, so they have deviated from the right concentration to deep concentration. So right concentration and deep absorptions we have to distinctly recognize.
Okay, Bhante, I got it. But it's good to do both, that's all that I want, my comments.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we have spent almost 1.5 hours, and we hope to discuss the same topic next time also. So there we can a little bit in detail go through the Vipassana Jhanas and have some kind of an understanding of that. So with that, I'd like to conclude today's Sutta teaching session. And all the merits that we have accumulated, we'll share with all the past relatives. We share with all the celestial beings and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to attain Path, Fruition, Nibbana. And while keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata cham hehi sambhataṁ punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata cham hehi sambhataṁ punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata cham hehi sambhataṁ punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha jabummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiraṁ rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha jabummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiraṁ rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha chabummattha devanaga mahiddhika punyantam anumoditva chiraṁ rakkantu mamparam. Idam vo nyati nam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satam samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.